Opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
You are listening to In the Know with David O., informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB. And now, your host, Philadelphia Councilman David O.
All right. Good afternoon. This is David O. Thank you for joining me again here on In the Know with David O. on WWDB AM 860. Listen, we have got a fascinating show for you. I guarantee you will, you know, learn a lot. You know, it's a hot topic. It's unfortunately, you know, a very challenging issue that we face, drug addiction, but so many things that come from it, and how do we address it, and to what extent? We're going to be talking to Mel Wells, President, CEO of ODAT. That stands for One Day at a Time. And he's going to talk about what that means. And the whole issue is that one size does not fit all. And what is a kind of like the real experience in life that has allowed people to overcome one of the most challenging things that they have ever faced, addiction. And then we are going to be joined by another well-known figure in the recovery community. That is Rick Ford, host of Recovery Talk 101 on WURD, W-U-R-D, 900 AM. And he's going to be talking about long-term addiction recovery and joining in the conversation with Mel Wells. And then we're going to turn it completely around and talk about this topic. Hey, bed bugs. Do you know what bed bugs are? Like, do you see them? Can you see them? I don't know. But listen, there's a lot of talk about it. It's not in the news every day, but it comes up. And then they're here in Philadelphia, and I don't know about Bucks County, Delaware County, Camden, or the other places, but we've actually introduced legislation about bed bugs. And I know it's well-meaning, but is it the right thing to do? I mean, what exactly are bed bugs? How do you deal with it? And I think people get the sense that it is kind of a large issue and maybe a big issue here in our area. But we'll be talking to Matt Kelly. He is the owner of Prodigy Pest Solutions, award-winning pest control company. And he's going to give us a lowdown on bed bugs and how you deal with them when we get to talking on this show. I just want to remind everyone, and I say this because you can actually hear this podcast. Last week, we were talking to Anthony Giordano of Stand Up South Philly. He was talking about the surprising and shocking announcement that a safe injection site was going to open right at Broad and Oregon. But without community input or knowledge, and the community came out, and that's what he was talking about. And then we were joined by Detectives Gercio and Parkinson, Special Investigation Unit of the Philadelphia Police Central Detective Division. And they were focusing on robbers that targeted folks, particularly Asian Americans, leaving the casino here in Philadelphia and following them home to Jersey and other counties, targeting them for robberies. And the reason they did that is because they are still working on that case. They've made two arrests, but they think there's more to be had. And then finally, we talked to Stephanie Sun of Philly Counts 2020, being counted. Yes, the census, so important. Let me thank our show sponsor. Without them, we would not have our guests today. We wouldn't be on air. And that, of course, is Weinerman Pain and Wellness. They're located at the Land Title Building, 100 South Broad Street, Suite 1800. They're open from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. right near City Hall. If you need, help with rehabilitation, pain management, check them out. Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Well, listen, let me start with Mel Wells. He is a well-known figure here in Philadelphia when it comes to addiction and recovery. He's got experience from one end to the other. He is the president and CEO of One Day at a Time, founded by his father, the late Reverend Henry T. Wells. And he took over in 2005, and under Mel's leadership, ODAT, One Day at a Time, ODAT has built and strengthened stronger communities through their anti-violence mentorship and recovery initiatives. ODAT continues to serve thousands of residential clients annually at its facility, supplying recovery, addiction, from addiction, and homeless shelter services. He has done more with that, but to join us right now and tell us what's going on with ODette and what's going on in the world of helping those recover from addiction, let's welcome Mel Wells. Mel, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Councilman. One day at a time.
Yep.
We have been around for over 30 years.
Yes.
I cannot speak of one day at a time without mentioning the community, God, and my father who have passed away, and my mom who actually helped get him off of drugs. Started off in one room, multiplied to 32 houses, and we also located in London, India, and Cambodia, all
wow.
through the grace of God.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And tell the folks about one day at a time. What does it mean, and how does your effort to help people differ from some other efforts out there?
Yeah, well, one day at a time is a fight for anybody in recovery, anybody, those who are infected and also affected. We approach it with a holistic approach.
Mm.
It's not, the small part is getting off the drugs, but it's the other services that help the individual with the character. We also work with guys who stand on the street corners. We just created a program called Same Day Pay that
right.
allows guys to put their gun down for the day and go and make some money. It's $100, they get a check, they can go
right.
cash at the end of the day, and they get paid up to six times, that's $600. Right now, our crew has 15 part-time workers, and it's just growing. I'll be honest with you, it's just growing. The community's loving it, and that's because what we do it one day at a time. We keep our community first. You know,
right.
we clean outside. We cut over, I think it's 300 lots now. We do a month with PHS. We also do a lot of cleanup projects with ex-offenders that is also sponsored by the CDC along with Temple University. So what we do is have over 27 services to make sure that our people in the community, whether infected or affected by drug and alcohol, that they're staying busy.
Yeah, let me stop you there for a second because I think, you know, one of the things that you mentioned the main thing, actually, that you mentioned is working with the community.
Got to.
It's about the community. It's in the community. Because so many times people focus on one aspect of drug addiction. For
yeah.
example, the person who is addicted, unfortunately, maybe their family, maybe their loved ones. But not the community.
Yeah.
Not the people who, you know, drug addiction is not a victimless crime in this. That because of the addiction, people are selling drugs. People
yeah.
are trapped in the life of crime. People
yeah.
are being murdered to sell these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has a global effect.
Yes.
And so when you talk about the community, because so much of the issues we have to deal with is the community and the addiction recovery. They're not in sync. The community don't want it. You know, there's this battle. But
no.
you are healing the community in a more holistic way that the community sees the benefits of what you're doing.
Yeah, because we work with the entire family, you know. We don't forget where we come from.
Right.
And I hate to say it to you like this, councilman, that the community feels though they've been lied to for so long that they tire.
Mm.
And they love places like One Day at a Time where they can put their input. They could put their truth out there. And so for years, the community has always been at the forefront of One Day at a Time. Again, you know, when we have a mom or a dad that comes into the program, what we also do is take toys and stuff to the kids. What we also do is to make sure grandma has her rent paid. We also do a holistic approach to make sure that people are not just suffering from those who are infected. Because when you come into a program, a lot of people do not have the resources to back their family up at home. What we do is provide those resources. We let a person come in, pick up a broom, get a job, and do for
mm-hmm.
so they can feel good about those themselves. It's too many organizations where they just put the focus on not using a drug. And they
right,
are understanding
right.
that, no, this is a powerful individual. And some of them can tell me how to better do my job. And that's my coaches. That's who I work for. You know, I call myself the president one day at a time, but I don't use that a lot. My thing is the servant of the community. And so
mm-hmm.
my boss is the community.
Right, mm-hmm. right. You know, it reminds me the way you're talking about a New Year's resolution to go on a diet. And after about 2 months of like eating like some pretty undelicious food, you lose some weight and then you can't stay on the diet.
That's
like,
it.
So you're saying people can get off of drugs and difficult, challenging, but you're saying that's not even the hardest part of it.
It's not.
Because then even if you get off the drugs, you got to stay off the drugs,
yeah.
get your life together, you know, get back
yeah.
into the community,
yeah.
do that healing. How do you approach that?
Well, we let people know that, you know, you have a new life and that it's still possible to dream. Right. You got to realize a guy like myself has been in recovery for 15 years, incarcerated six times. Wow. My father came off a death row with an eighth grade education, and he always say, you put that out there, because if it's possible for us, it's possible for any of them.
Let me stop you here, because you are a well-known figure in terms of community advocacy, civil rights, human rights, mm-hmm. and now you're telling people, listen, I was locked up.
That's right.
And my father was a pastor. He was locked up. He was on drugs. I was in the life of crime as well.
Yeah, because the growing part is that we want you to know that it's possible. Mm. You know, we tired of people coming to our community telling us possible what's possible, and they never went through the process of what's possible. So what we're showing you is that the proof is in the writing right here.
Because a lot of times people, and Rick Ford, I'm going to ask you to chime in. People say...
Yeah, I was waiting, but I went. You make your statement.
They say, like, recovery doesn't work. But you're saying recovery does work, and it works for so many people.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny to follow what Mel says, and I hope folks that are viewing and listening that not only just this whole thing about what you do, but there's a plethora of services that they provide down there. That, and I'm quite sure Mel will talk about it. That, you know, where they're located at One Day at a Time, I kind of named it Recovery Boulevard. Mm. Because it's become the mecca here in the city of Philadelphia. When people come to Philadelphia, they hear about One Day at a Time. And what happens there is essential. You talked about all the services that you guys provide and the feedings and all that. Man, listen, who would think that two drug dealers, me and you, two drug users, me and you,
that's it,
really it's about being of service. For the many people who was in the dark.
That's right.
Let me ask the both of you, because you just said something that I'm sure my listeners are reeling from a little bit. Two drug dealers, two drug users, and now you're both in the life of service, helping people to get off of drugs, resume their life, and heal the community. What made you do that, Mel, and then Rick? What caused that change?
I'll let Mel go first.
Well, Councilman, I think the councilman's going to try to make me cry.
But
what caused that change is I seen so many of my friends go to the graveyard. Mm. I seen so many of my friends that I should have been locked up for the rest of my life, things I never got caught up into. So what caused it for me was just realizing the grace of God. Mm. I seen one of my friends at a gambling game. That was my moment of sanity. The guy came back, shot his eye out. And when I went to go hold my friend, there was a hole in the back of his head. The bullet went through his eye to the back. And what I seen right there, I seen myself. And I ran home. I had to be like 21 years old. I ran home like a baby to my mom in her arms with blood all over me and said, that was it. So that was one of my pieces where I say, I got to change my life.
And you know, it's funny. I always go back to, I've been clean 29 years. I always go back to October the 1st, 1990. Mm. Sleeping in an old house, no lights, no water, no heat, next to dead bodies. Mm-hmm. And that was October the 1st, 1990. But people ask, well, what happened, Rick? And I always go to October the 2nd, 1990. Mm. And I cried all day. Mm. Listen, Councilman, I cried all day. I couldn't understand why was I keep crying. I found out later, Mel, that God was cleansing me. And I haven't had an urge, craving, or a desire to go back to that lifestyle. So I was rescued through the grace of God. And I tell you, it's a matter. When I think about sleeping in that old house at 16th and Poplar, no lights, no water, no heat. It was quite dark. But the very next day, that's my resurrection day. Mm-hmm. That's better than my birth date. Mm-hmm. So that's my story. And I, you know, since October 2nd, 1990, I have, you know, even getting locked up, when I first got clean, I was selling drugs. I was on the corner of Spring Ranch at 32nd Street. I usually show people my tattoos, their gunshot wounds. Something happens when you get to the end of you.
Yeah.
And I had nothing to do with it.
Right.
Nothing to do with it. So we worked so hard. Hey, now let's say that. You know, me and Mel, we got a wonderful relationship. I love him like a little brother because, you know, it's when you think about what's happening in this city, folks migrate to Philadelphia because of the high level of treatment and recovery that we present.
Right, right. Now, let me ask you this as we continue on. Rick, if you had a message in like a minute or two to tell people, any people, anybody, what's your message from your life's experience and your mission? And then I'm going to ask Mel the same thing. What message have you got for folks?
I normally tell people this. You really got to get to the end of you. Mm. Now, people say, what do you mean by that? You really got to get to the end of you and allow that thing above you, the Creator, kind of do something in your life. And so it's... In the third step of one of the recovery things, we say in order to grow spiritually, we need to be honest about our beliefs. Mm-hmm. Even in my addiction, I believed that God was somewhere and he didn't want this for me.
That's right.
And I believe that. I'll say that to anybody that's viewing and listening. Please get to the end of you for that moment to hear God's voice and your inner voice say that it ain't over. You can turn this thing around.
Mm. And how about you, Mel?
For me, I tell a lot of my street friends, you know, 1 minute of pleasure can get you a lifetime of hell. Mm. You know, you can understand. Right. You pull that trigger, you use that drug, your life can be over. Also, I tell my people, and I hope people listen in the city, that, you know, stop looking for leaders and look in the mirror because you're the leader you've been looking for. You've been chosen. You made it through the storm. God protected you through that storm for a reason. You're not incarcerated. You're not in the graveyard for a reason. You have been chosen. I don't care about your education background. All I care about is the present, and God want to use you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, we were talking before the show about, which was kind of, we were talking about, like, listen, you know, sometimes you have something in your mind. You're trying to say something to somebody. You're having this conversation, but it's like two ships passing in the night.
Yeah.
And so, like, my limited experience, although I will say, listen, I have experience, you know, in my knowledge and experience with trying to help people with drug addiction and all that. So I think of about the people that I know, the worst case, the bipolar, mental, life on the street, prostitutions, physical assaults, humiliation, every effort to get off of drugs. But now I'm talking to somebody, and I started to realize that person is on a completely different plane. They're talking about they enjoy drugs. They believe they have a right to use drugs, heroin, whatever it is, and that's their choice. And they look at it kind of like, hey, somebody's smoking cigarettes, somebody's drinking alcohol. I just and my friends choose to do heroin or whatever drugs, and that's our choice. And what we don't want is we don't want to die from it, but we want to do it. And I'm not saying that's all, listen, I'm not saying that's all harm reduction people, because there's a lot of, listen, people, they want to do harm reduction so people can get treated, get better, have a full life. But definitely there's a group of people that's kind of like, hey, listen, we just want to, you know, make sure that you're not telling us what to do and we could do it. And we don't see that level of harm. Yeah, people get addicted, but they shouldn't be dying. Mm-hmm. So, you know, harm reduction is just making sure people aren't hurt while they do their drugs. And so that has been like a revelation to me. I'm like, wow, I you know, but it's a little mind boggling. Yeah. What's been your experience with that?
Well, you know, when I think of that, and again, I'll reiterate this, a lot of people really don't understand the true definition of addiction. Even when I was using drugs, I was doing it. I was having fun. But fun stops at some point when real life shows up, when hell breaks out, when you lose family, loved ones, you go to jail, you all those things. And society perpetuates this whole thing that it's okay. You think about prohibition, alcoholism. When I look at the history of all that stuff, how society perpetuates at the sporting events and all this. I stopped smoking cigarettes because I haven't had a cigarette in 20-something years. Because I realized, what was I getting out of that? Think about what's happening in treatment today. And it's a health issue. People are arguing, well, I want to go to treatment, but I want to still smoke cigarettes. You idiot, it's killing you.
Right.
And the city of Philadelphia and the Department of Behavioral Health, they are saying, listen, we want to work on your addiction, not your nicotine problem.
Right.
Think about this, councilman. In this city, how are we talking about sugary taxes, right? This whole argument about soda tax. But some people want to support shooting heroin.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
That's wake up, people.
And I know Mel's got something to say, but I just wonder, you know, because a lot of times, you know, when I see people kind of like in that light of, you know, kind of like harm reduction at that level, you know, they're young. And part of it I wonder is being a young person on drugs is, to me, a million miles from being an old person on drugs. You're young, you could stay with your friend, meet someone at a bar, get a sandwich, hook up. You do. Once you hit like that 55-year-old drug addict.
And you're still getting high.
Nobody wants you to come over. Nobody's got anything for you. You're just an old person strung out on drugs. Anyway, exactly. Mel, what's your impression?
My thing is that we're not, me and Rick, not working on addiction. We're working on people's lives. We're working on life.
Right.
Everybody only want to talk about the drugs and the alcohol without talking about a person's life and what led them to the drug and alcohol and how they had to. I had some guys who seen their mothers and sisters raped in front of them. There's a lot of trauma that's going on, a lot of mentally illness that is going on. You know, a lot of individuals that we have in our recovery program done tried everything. The only thing next for them is the graveyard, is the jail. So they done been in treatment. They done been in MAT. They done tried everything. And what they scared of is making choices. They want someone else to make the choices. They had that choice when they was young at 19 years old to pick the weed up or not. And they made a bad choice. Several of them made bad choices 15 to 20 times. So when they asking me, Mr. Mel, can you decide for me? I even have guys who get 6 months clean with their first paycheck and say, Mel, what store should I go to? I'm like, you
exactly.
They're like, you go. No, you tell me, because I don't want to make the mistake, because last time I was walking by, they were smoking weed and ignite my mind, and I started. It gets that crazy. crazy.
Listen, I'm going to ask you to stop right here because we've got to go to commercial break. Listen, everybody, stay tuned. We're going to come back with Rick Ford, Mel Wells, and then we're going to be talking to Matt Kelly about bed bugs and how to get rid of them.
You are listening to In the Know with David O. Informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 1617 John F. Kennedy Boulevard, Suite 1100, Philadelphia, PA 19103. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Gracie Jiu-Jitsu begins with one basic premise. Technique trumps all. Proven techniques allow the weak to overcome the strong. Learn self-defense that works, all while improving your physical condition, mental outlook, and healthy lifestyle. Gracie Academy Philadelphia will help you reach your goals. Take two free classes and see for yourself. Gracie Academy, 1231 Bainbridge Street, Philadelphia. Call them 215-830-6501 or visit their website at phlbjj.com. Get started at Gracie Academy, Philadelphia.
All right, we are back. Listen, you know, we've been talking to Mel Wells, the president and CEO of One Day at a Time, Addiction Recovery, and so much more. Is he letting us know? It's all about the community.
That's right.
It's not just about recovering from addiction. It's about living your life and being part of a society.
Yeah.
And we're joined by Rick Ford, host of Recovery Talk 101. You can hear him on WURD 900 AM. He's got his show and a very long career involved in recovery, addiction, and services. So let me just kind of tell you a little bit, because I told you about Mel Wells, but listen, Rick Ford has his master's degree in human services from Lincoln University. He has his bachelor's in substance abuse from Community College of Philadelphia. He was a community liaison for the Pennsylvania Alliance of Recovery Residences, and former special liaison to the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disabilities here in Philadelphia, and many other things as well. And where we left off, we were talking about like some different folks, some different ideas. And so much of what we've talked about is the harms and the ills, getting off of addiction and getting into society. And yet there are people who are kind of advocating for like the legalization of drugs and kind of like their right to do drugs and kind of like just kind of like reducing the ill effects of it, but not really kind of like preventing it. They want to enjoy drugs. And so I'm asking now, Mel, mm-hmm. like in your experience as someone who's kind of fighting the demon of drugs, have you had experience with these type of folks when you run across them or no?
No, we have all different, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. so what we believe, you hear other people who not from our city talk about our city, but we have a menu of services because there's different levels of breakthroughs in recovery. Mm-hmm. So you may have some people who may need the medical assistance to stay off of the drugs. But then you also have those who have the environments of abstaining from the drugs. You also have the spiritual environment. You gotta give people the options of the menus. In the city of Philadelphia, years ago when we first started, there wasn't options of menu. One Day at a Time was the first recovery house, and then you had Cadenzia. That was it. So what DBH did a great job of, I say, yeah. Dr. Jones and Roland Lamb, they have Dr. Evans, City Council, right. all of us and the leadership, you know, good for me now, y'all have created a menu of services for anybody who want to get involved with recovery.
And just for our listeners, DBH, he means the Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disabilities,
yeah.
MAT, Medically Assisted Treatment, yeah. because some people, now they say MAT, Medically Assisted yeah. Treatment, like methadone, methadose is the gold standard, but other people say, listen, I can't go from one addiction to the other. I don't want to be on heroin, get detox, come out, and now have to go do methadone. I just want abstinence. I'm detoxed. I just don't want to do it. I don't want to touch it, but I need some help mm-hmm. to make sure that I can get through this struggle.
You know, it's really, when I think about that in MAT, I'll go all the way back. I worked at every level of treatment, from detox to residential to outpatient. I did psychotherapy. Now, watch this. There was a guy who was incarcerated for 12 to 15 years. Mm. The judge said to him, upon your discharge, we're going to refer you to MAT. And everybody in the courtroom was like, well, the guy did 15 years. Y'all letting him out. The judge said, if you look at your behavior, you kept using drugs, shooting drugs, you probably need to get straight on MAT. And we sat in that courtroom till this day. This guy is still clean. Amen. Based on the recommendation from the judge. Mm. It makes a lot of sense now.
Right.
Makes mm-hmm. a lot of sense mm-hmm. now.
And let me ask you this, because this is interesting, right? You have doctors. Mm-hmm. Some of them are physicians. Some of them are psychiatrists. Some of them will heal your body. Some of them will heal your mind. But if they are not specifically in the field of addiction and recovery and substance abuse, they actually probably are not that. I'm a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I'm not a lawyer for everything. There are more fields of law that I know nothing about than that I do know about. And so to me, you know, when we talk about addiction, I understand the part about the physical body, but I am interested in hearing from you. What is the addiction part when we start talking about, as you approach addiction? I know it's both, the body, the mind. Where does the mind come into this?
You know, addiction is threefold: physical, mental, and spiritual. Mm-hmm. I want to be clear about that.
Right.
And something happens. I always go back to the progression. I want to use this word, progression. Mm-hmm. First mistake I made was in the sixth grade. I wanted to smoke a cigarette with some guys to fit in. By the time I got to the seventh grade, I was smoking marijuana, nicotine. Listen to the word progression. Eighth grade, alcohol. Ninth grade, cocaine. Tenth grade, they said, did you go to high school? I said, I went to school high. Mm, wow. Because I didn't understand mm-hmm. what I was struggling with or what I was suffering from. Mm-hmm. Addiction is really deep, man. Mm-hmm. It's physical, mental, and spiritual. The mental part of it is that tell you can stop when you want to stop. a lot of people don't understand, listen, the disease of addiction is threefold. And I'll say this, staying clean has to come first, mm-hmm. not second, mm-hmm. not third. You got to get to a point where you realize, hey, I got to reach out to get some help. Mm-hmm. And that's most people think they can stop using. If you're trying to stop using drugs on sheer willpower, it's a lifetime situation.
I would agree and say.
You can't stop.
The progression of it, you can see it a lot of times, is focuses on attitude, thoughts, and behaviors. Mm. Also in the environment. That's why when you heard some things, I won't say it, I leave y'all two guys, experts, to talk about what they put on the city of Philadelphia in the last couple of weeks. A lot of people are not cool with it because they know when something comes in their environment, it can actually affect them, because what we're fighting is our minds, a manipulative mindset. Right, that's right. What we fighting all day. I should, I can't, should I pick it up, do I pick it up? And even a guy who got 10 years or 20 years clean today, me and Rick, we still fighting it. And a lot of people don't understand, you know, if you put something in our environment, that's where our mind starts to go.
Right. For the listeners, we're talking about safe injection sites and not at this point saying the good or the bad,
right.
but just saying, listen, even if it does good to the extent that people believe that, and there's evidence for that, mm-hmm. I happen not to conclude that, but however, without getting into that, if you stick something in a community where people are going to come in with their heroin, walk in with their meth, do whatever they do, escorted by the police, the city now is condoning and approving of this, and you put that right in the middle of a community, it has other effects.
I'm going to let Rick go because I want you to finish it up, Rick. What I'm saying for the community is our community got to come first. Don't come bring us more problems and you did not fix what's already broken in our community. We also, you sit with PAR, Rick. We have a lot of different recovery houses who do a great job.
Yeah.
Who need more funding to actually make their facilities much better so the community is not complaining as much. We need people in our community, even inside of the programs, One Day at a Time, Prevention Point, PAR. We need to be able to hire some of these people in our community. The community would be a lot for stuff if they see people keeping promises, if they see the leaders keeping promises and putting the community first. I can open up several sites throughout the city, and especially in North Philadelphia, because they know I promise, because their son and their daughter works for me, so they believe what's going to happen. We've been past their house for the last 10 years with Christmas tour, so they believe in those things. We got to take care of our community first. They got to come first before you bring something else in.
Yeah, and you know, Mel, you couldn't have said it any better. I think it's essential that the citizens of Philadelphia have been afraid of relying solely on government and city.
Yes.
We, and I say this all the time, nobody will save us. We have to save ourselves.
Right.
We have to unify, work collectively together to make things happen for the greater good. When people see the work that Mel and those folks are doing, not only providing recovery, but giving folks an opportunity to become employable.
Yeah.
Right. And it affects, guess what? This disease is a family disease. It's not an individual disease. Every person that's listening right now knows somebody that's using drugs in their family, their loved ones, their neighbors, etc. We have to work together. This disease don't discriminate. It don't care if you're black, white, gay, lesbian, how much money you make. We are all in the same battle.
Yeah, and I always point this out, and I'm sure people don't like it to a large extent, but I don't know how you can discriminate. I said, look, between 2006 and 2012, in order to bring drugs into the United States, in Mexico, where our drugs are coming from, 120,000 people were murdered. Mm. Not hurt, not injured, mm-hmm. not run over by a car by accident, murdered. 120,000 Mexicans murdered for the drug trade. 27,000 missing. By the time you get into Philadelphia, where people are killing each other in order to make some of that money, and that money is made available by people who are purchasing these drugs. It is not a victimless crime. You cannot go out and enjoy these drugs knowing that people are looking for an opportunity. Some could have gone to college.
Yeah.
Some might not have gone to college, but they entered the life of crime for the temptation of the money and sometimes because of no choice. So the damage done by this drug trade is a horrible, horrible thing.
And you know what's funny, Councilman, when you say that, drugs will never go anywhere. We spend $1 billion on the war on drugs. In actuality, we're spending $1 billion on war in bad schools. Mm. It's a lot that's happening to us as a people. with all those external factors of the Mexicans and drugs coming in, drugs will always be here. So for the individual that's using drugs, there's two things. If you're trying to stay clean on sheer willpower, it's a lifetime journey.
It's a challenge thing. I always say, I always think of myself as a weak man, not a strong man. And I know, if I had a gambling problem, mm-hmm. do not go anywhere near a casino because you are not a strong man. If you got a weakness for that, mm-hmm. then the last thing you need is go anywhere near there because all of a sudden your steering wheel starts turning in that direction. The gas pedal starts going. Next thing you know, a magnet, you're
that's
in that casino. So just stay away from it. Yeah. And that's what you were saying about environment. Don't put things in our environment that is going to tempt us, encourage. You know, all that type of thing.
Yeah, just imagine putting a safe injection site anywhere. It's like roaches. If you turn the lights on, they scatter. So the very moment the drug dealers find out there's a safe injection site, whether South Philly, West Philly, wherever, mm-hmm. Kensington, mm-hmm. they migrate there like that's their feeding place.
And it's
real business.
We have to learn the street politics, councilman.
Yes.
That surrounds this. You got to understand, in order for you to go into a safe injection site, I'm not saying I'm for them, I'm against them, I'm not there yet, but in order for you to go into the safe injection site, somebody's watching you go into that safe injection site. I need to know where you got your dope from. If you didn't buy your dope from our corner, this is what we're telling you. The dope got to be bought from over here to go inside the safe injection site. Even though you're a private owner, you think you own, the block owns your stuff right there. So now another guy goes into the safe injection site who bought drugs. So we got to make an example out of that.
And that's street talk.
Now you end up on Channel 6 News.
Yeah.
You never wanted to listen. We want to do what's fair instead of what's right. Yeah. Now is the time to do what's right. So I'm not saying for or against. What I am saying is let the community know that they count first. And let's have that conversation then. But put them first, please.
That's a very important point because while I have researched this stuff and I've made a conclusion, I say, listen, I'm not making a conclusion for everybody. They got to make their own conclusion. So if you want to come out on the other side, that's fine. But tell and educate the community. Give them the facts. Let other people counter those facts because you're talking about something that was never mentioned in any of this, that somebody owns that corner. And sometimes when they go to jail, they sell that corner. And when somebody believes they own that corner, they kill the next group of people that's on the corner right near them.
Got it.
Right? It's a market. When I think about this again, it's funny. When I think about that street mentality, it's the only people like me and Mel understand it, that if that person goes to jail or gets killed, it's a shift in organizational leadership.
Right.
Who's mainly when you find out and you talk to these guys how much money they were making back then. Mm. When I was in Operation Sunrise, we went into one house. They ran out the back. There was a baby and a little girl on the couch. Watch this here. On the couch, it was a pillow, and I was with the police. We went in there. The pillow had bundles of money wrapped in red rubber bands. I said, I'm getting out of here and let the cops do their job. There's a lot of money out there.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money out there.
And I cap this for those who don't know the money. This was old school 10 years ago. Just on the dope scene on the corner, I can't put everything out there, but I made $10 a bundle with 15 workers. 15 other workers on the corner. We all still went home with $1,600 a day. You got to understand how much money that is. That means that corner did over $400,000 during the day. So imagine what they got. So it's a lot of politics nobody's talking about. And to be honest with you, the streets is happy that you're not talking about them. And they're saying, Bill, baby, Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for people to understand, listen, I tell them if anybody remembers cornflakes, I got to watch myself because I'm getting older.
Go ahead.
I said, listen, if you can stand on a corner and make $4 million in cash selling cornflakes, someone's going to kill you for that corner to sell cornflakes.
That's right.
And this is what we've got.
Yeah.
And this is the challenge that we've got.
Yeah. You know, I was signed up, and it's funny, I was so tired of being homeless. And when the drug dealers say, Rick, you know what? Everybody loves you. Here's your package. Mm. My very first ounce of coke, I turned it into 6 ounces less than a week.
Yeah.
And I took over a whole community. You know, with it was Rick Ford, he the man. Me and my buddy, and I'm not going to mention his name, there was an assortment of guns that we bought. You would come in my house and sit on the couch and accidentally sit on a gun. Man, I had never wanted no more of that stuff.
Well, listen, I'm going to end the conversation here, but not the two of you completely, because I'm going to skip the commercial break. We're going to go over to Matt Kelly. But before we do that, what I'd like to do is, Mel, could you give people information about how to get in touch with your services, and then Rick about your radio show and how to get in touch with you?
To learn more about the ODAT Recovery Program support services, including reentry, employment, follow president.odat on Instagram and hit the link in my bio for the same day pay program and also census jobs. So we're hiring. We have jobs out there. So hit us up.
There you go. Listen.
I'm signing up, Mel. signing up. So folks can catch up with Rick Ford at DerekFord123@gmail.com, or you can call me at the radio station every Saturday from 6 to 7 p.m., 215-634-8065. Or guess what? My phone line is open 24 hours a day, 215-327-5065. We here to save lives.
That's what we do.
That's what we do.
All right. Well, listen, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have Matt Kelly come over here, swing over this way, and then I'm going to have Mel and Rick over there sharing that microphone because, listen, man, we're going to start talking about bed bugs. And as an intro, you two were talking about bed bugs. And here's the thing, just making sure that the places that you have are clean, making sure that, there are no issues because you do housing as well. All right. Listen, this is Matt Kelly. Listen, I know Matt Kelly. I know him from Gracie Academy Jiu-Jitsu right here in Philadelphia. He is a master grappler. He is a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But he actually joins me today not to deal with, weak overcomes strong, but how do the smart beat those bed bugs? Matt himself has been in the field since 2007. He worked for one of the large pest control companies before going out on his own. In 2012, he started Prodigy Pest Solutions. And just the next year, believe it or not, the next year he was awarded Best Bed Bug Removal Company by Philadelphia Magazine. And then in 2016-18, Best Pest Control Company by Philadelphia Happening Magazine. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, Councilman.
All right. So listen, you've been listening to this whole conversation here. And I was saying, listen, there's somebody listening to this fascinating, very important conversation saying, I just can't wait till Matt Kelly gets on because I got a bed bug problem. Now, bed bugs is something we hear about a lot. And in fact, City Council, actually, Councilman Mark Squill introduced legislation. I didn't quite understand what he was talking about kind of initially. And then after that, I read about it. New York City, five-star hotels, bed bugs.
Sure.
What are bed bugs? How do you know you have them? And why are they so hard to get rid of?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people ask me, hey, could you actually see bed bugs?
And like with your naked eye.
With your naked eye, yeah. So bed bugs come, they have three stages. They have eggs, they have nymphs, which are the babies, and then they have the adults. Every single one of those stages you can see with the naked eye.
You can see
You can, absolutely.
Wow.
The eggs are obviously a little bit more difficult to pick up. Same with the nymphs. The nymphs are the babies.
But hey, maybe the trained naked eye, because I'll tell you, I can't see them. I don't know if I can see them or not. I don't know what I'm looking for. What are you looking for?
The adults, though, the adults are about the size of an apple seed, so they're about a quarter inch long. So those are, you can pick them up pretty easily if you know where to look. Normally, when we do bed bug inspections, I'd say about 85 to 90% of the time, we find them under the box spring. They call them bed bugs because they want to be as close to the host as possible. Usually that's within 3 to 5 feet of a bed because they're a nocturnal insect. So they come out at night. That doesn't necessarily mean they only feed at night, but they come out at nighttime and that's when they attack. So
let me ask you this. I mean, because the way I understand it is people become aware of bed bugs, not because they saw one, but because something happened to them. What is happening to them?
A lot of times they're getting bites, and there's different opinions out there. Some people say that they they get bites on their arm or bites on their leg, and sometimes they say it goes three in a row, they call it. They call it breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So that's one sign that you can look out for if you got three bites or lining up. Some experts say that's true, but you know, everybody reacts differently to bites. I've seen some people who are getting bit, they have thousands of bed bugs in their bed and they don't have a single mark on them, whereas somebody else could be allergic to the bite and they get bit in the face and they look like they got hit by Mike Tyson.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, so it's...
bed bug bites, are they dangerous?
The bites themselves aren't dangerous. Usually you'll just have like a itchy-like reaction, so...
Kind of like a mosquito or something?
Exactly. Exactly.
But you got to get rid of the bed bugs.
Yeah, you do have to get rid of the bed bugs.
Why is that? You know, I'm not saying that you should keep bed bugs, but why should you get rid of the bed bugs?
Well, if you don't get rid of the bed bugs eventually, especially what we deal with a lot in Philadelphia, what happens is you have one house that gets infested, and then the next thing that happens is they start branching off into the neighboring units.
Do they travel, or do they kind of attach themselves to a person, a pet or something, go outside? You know, how do they move around?
They always prefer a human host, and they will, if one place gets really bad, they are going to move to the next. So let's say, for example, too crowded,
too many bed bugs.
Let's just say this. Let's say that you have somebody living in a house and you have a row home.
Yeah.
And that person moves out and there's nobody longer in that house. What could happen is they go searching for a blood meal. If they don't have a blood meal in about 10 days or so, they'll go looking for one. They do that through your carbon dioxide, and then there's also certain chemicals that you release when you sweat. And they can pick those up and sense them. Some of the traps that they have right now actually have, that's why it's designed to go inside the traps to lure them in. So yeah, it's...
So there are traps for them.
There's a bunch of different things out there now. It's a big topic.
Now let me ask you this, because you hear all kind of things. So the first thing I see is, I see mattresses on, you know, for the, and they're wrapped in plastic.
Sure.
Is that for real, or is
usually
that like
usually when you see a mattress outside these days, it's not because they just wanted a new bed. You know, most likely they're dealing with bed bugs.
But what about to wrap it in plastic? Is that urban legend, or is that for real? You wrap it in plastic.
Well, you know, I think that's a law that was...
Yeah, but is that a good law or a bad law?
I would say it might be a good law because you have the trash guys picking it up and they don't want to get it on them.
True. So maybe by wrapping it in plastic, the people who are there to pick up the mattress feel a little better about picking it up.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's also one better way to – that would be a good way to remove it from the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you pick that up in the master bedroom, you have bed bugs all over it, and you touch you touch the ground or you touch the wall, those things are just gonna, they'll start right back up and wherever they drop off at.
What do you tell people, like in terms of, if you see this, if you got this, call us, because you better have us come out and take a look at whether you got a problem or not.
Yeah, sure. Like you said, the bites. Okay, so if you're getting bit, or if you see an insect walking across your pillow or walking across the bed or, you know, something like that, that's when you would call in and you would say, hey, listen, this is what I have going on. I think I may have bed bugs. Sometimes it is bed bugs and sometimes it's not. You know, sometimes we get customers who call in, they send us a picture over by text, and it could be carpet beetle larvae, which the larvae of the carpet beetles, they have little hairs on the side of them. And if somebody rolls over on one, it can get into their skin, and they have like an allergic-like reaction that sort of looks like bed bug bites. You know, so what I would recommend, the first thing I recommend, if you think you have something or if you see an insect, you have to take a picture of it or you have to capture it, because that's the number one rule when you're dealing with any type of insect. You have to identify it. If I take a guess and say, hey, I'll treat for bed bugs, but it was something completely different, then you're doing a disservice.
Well, the good news is whatever it is, you can handle it, but you do want to identify it. So here's a good time to say, how do people, if they can get a picture, how do they send it to you? How to get in touch with you? All that type of stuff.
Yeah, sure. Our website is www.prodigypestsolutions.com, and then you can reach, it's myself and my wife who run the business, 267-603-1811.
So he's telling you he's got a boss.
Yeah, I do. We get for sure.
We all got bosses.
That is for sure. And she's listening right now, and she's definitely my boss.
That's why the business is a success. Yeah, that's right.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, in terms of like getting rid of bed bugs,
sure.
What are some of the ways that you get rid of bed bugs? Because there's a lot of rumors out there, tell us the ways.
Well, the number one way you can possibly get rid of bed bugs would be through any form of heat. So what we do is we go out and we heat the place up. It could be an apartment or it could be a commercial space. It could be a single family home, row home. The number one thing that we do is we do those heat treatments and we get the house up to about 140 degrees. And then what we do is we have ductwork and heaters that are set up with temperature probes. So that way we know every single square inch of that house is getting up to that temperature. Mm. Because bed bug eggs, nymphs, and adults will all die at 122 degrees if exposed for about an hour. So if we do that, you know, there's a good chance your bed bugs are going to go away.
So let's say you got a really nice place, beautiful furniture. It's the kind of like a mansion, and you got bed bugs. You got a big problem. Now, what if your inner city row house, you don't have that much money?
And that's the biggest problem because myself and my wife and all of our workforce, we tell everybody the same thing when they call in. We don't want to charge you for a service if it's coming from somewhere else. So what we do first is we say, hey, listen, you need to have a open communication, just knock on your neighbor's door if you feel comfy enough. We recommend it all the time, knock on your neighbor's door, see if you have a problem. Because if they have a problem, we can come in there and do the best treatment in the world, but you're going to have bed bugs.
Because they're coming from next door.
Exactly.
And they're going to keep coming.
Exactly.
Right.
Like I said, you can go in there, you can do a heat treatment, and you'll do the best possible treatment in the world. They can just come back in the next day once that heat shuts off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Other than heat, what is another way of dealing with bed bugs? Is there another way?
There is another way. There's a couple chemicals out there. One in particular was developed by Penn State. It's called Apprehend, and it's actually a fungus. So you put this fungus, you apply it to the bed frame and the baseboards, and when a bed bug walks over top of it, it gets on their body, and then it starts to germinate. Mm. And it's really cool. You can tell that it got hit by this fungus because 10 days later their bodies start growing the fungus on them. They're dead and they're white. So it's it's really cool
and not harmful to humans, I would imagine, or pets having this fungus.
No, this is actually one of the safest ones that you can possibly use.
And is that kind of affordable as well?
That one is depending,
right?
On everyone's situation, but just to give you an idea, when you're doing a heat treatment, an average row home with three bedrooms and a living room, you're probably looking around $2,000 because it is an all-day job.
Wow.
You don't have to throw anything out. You barely have any legwork to do in terms of preparation.
As the homeowner.
Now, what happens when you're doing the chemical treatments, all those, you're gonna spend hours, if not days, getting your place prepared the way it needs to be prepared in order to get rid of the bed bugs.
Right.
Okay, so there's like a trade-off there. So I would say that usually a heat treatment is going to be double the price of where that Apprehend comes in.
Right.
Somewhere along those lines.
And now, do you have a lot of customers, for example, hotels, motels, that type of thing?
Absolutely.
That's what I always read about. We're reading about these five-star hotels in New York City.
Sure.
And they had a big bed bug problem.
Sure. Yes, we do a lot of hotels, but I got to tell you, our biggest issue, like I said before, is the row homes. Because in a hotel, you have a property manager.
Right.
Or a general manager, and the general manager is able to say, hey, listen, we can go into that unit, we'll open it up, and we'll see what's going on. But when you're dealing with independently owned homes, sometimes it's tough. We've had situations where we've done a treatment, and the neighbor was afraid to talk to other people or to their neighbors. So we would go up and we would offer a service for free. Hey, let us in your house. We'll help you out. We'll do what we got to do in order to satisfy the person that we charge a service to. You know what I mean?
Right.
And a lot of times they won't let us in. They won't even they won't take us up on that offer. So when that happens, usually there's something going on in there.
Right. Yeah. That's very interesting. Ricky, you were going to say something?
No, I think he answered the question about the heat process.
Right.
And I thought that was quite interesting. Well, like when people come moving, one of the things I got heard a guy talking about. Going in a hotel,
sure.
He told me as soon as he check in, he take his suitcase,
put it in the bathtub,
and put it in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Wow, why so? Why?
Well,
yeah.
Those bed bugs are weak climbers, So if one were to get into the bathtub, it wouldn't be able to climb out. Mm. That's one, and they wouldn't be able to climb up from the side to get in there.
Okay.
So that's a good tip.
And that's one of the things that anytime I check into a hotel or something, the first thing I do is I take the suitcase and put it in the shower area or the bathtub.
Sure.
And something about the beds in the hotel, I'm funny about that.
Right.
I don't take anything out the suitcase and put it in the drawers.
Right.
And let me survey the environment first. Then I'll make some decisions.
Absolutely. One more tip for if you are at a hotel. A lot of times they have the headboards that are right on the wall.
Yeah.
Pick that guy up and put it down. Because what they do is they'll bite you. And they actually have two mouth parts. One is an anesthetic. So it injects an anesthetic into you so you don't feel the bite. And the other mouth part draws it back up. Okay, but whenever they're taking blood meals, they're going to leave behind their fecal matter. And to give you an idea, it looks like if you took glue and put it on this table and then you threw a little bit of pepper down, that's what their droppings look like. And it's not going to be something that you can then just brush off. It's going to be something that bleeds into it because that's what it is. It's your blood. So make sure you look for pepper-like substance behind the headboard in the hotel.
Listen, we got a minute left, but what – I'm kind of getting you might have an allergic reaction, but what if you don't get rid of the bed bugs? What if you got kids and they keep getting bit? Is there like some real like medical issue that could develop?
As of right now, in the research, there's nothing saying that they can transfer any diseases or anything like that. It's just the bite that you would have to deal with, you know. But
and apparently a real pain to get rid of. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's how I relate it to. I relate everything in my life to jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
And it's a fight, you know. So if you think about fighting a tough opponent who keeps doing the same things, bed bugs are really similar. They're going to come at you from different angles, and you just think about different ways to approach it.
Very interesting.
Sure.
What's the worst case that you dealt with?
Worst case I dealt with, I know.
Revealing no identities, but what happened?
Yeah, there was, like I said, we do the heat treatment. So when we have electronics in there, like televisions, we have to put thermal blankets over the top of the electronics. So that way, when we turn it up to 140, 150 degrees, nothing will melt. So we tried that here, and the place was so bad that the bed bugs were crawling out of the TV because they were getting agitated from the
heat. And listen, we're running out of time. We could keep talking about this, but let me just say thank you, everybody, for being here. Tune in next week for In the Know with David O.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to In the Know with David O on 860 AM WWDB. Tune in again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. for more informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio with Philadelphia Councilman David O.